So hopefully rejuvenated by a caffeine injection, we're ready for part two. And in part two, we're going to be thinking about the question, how? What we've done so far is we've just thought a little bit about why. Why might it be good for us to be developing leaders? We came up with a whole range of reasons. Who are we looking to develop? I'm very aware that, of course, in a group of this size, we have huge diversity in terms of the sort of context we've come from. And that in some contexts, finding any leaders at all is a real challenge. Working down in Exeter Diocese over the last few years, we had a clergyman down there who just came up with a brilliant little phrase. He said, well, James, it's all very well, but in the area I'm in Plymouth, where we are in a deprived area, where we have a high number of asylum seekers and people living with mental illness, it's a real struggle because we have all sorts of issues that mean that finding leaders is not easy. He said, we have a little phrase we talk about, if we can find someone who is able, available and stable. And he said, we can sometimes find people with one. Occasionally we can find people with two. We've yet to find anyone with three. Able, available and stable. In fact, over the last year, we've added a fourth one to that, persuadable. Because you can sometimes find people who are able, available and stable, but they're not actually persuadable. And I know this can be a real challenge in some of our contexts, to actually find people who fit these sorts of things. And as we've talked about who are we looking for, we've got some prompts from the scripture that guide us in what we're looking for, and we have the realities of the context in which we find ourselves. And one person's context may be very different from another. So we can't just simply say, well, this model will work there, and then will work here as well. One of the challenges and a bit of work that we're doing at the moment is around how often middle-class models of leadership development are the main ways that people talk about leadership development. And, of course, in a non-middle-class context, they don't necessarily work. So how do you develop leaders in a like this guy down in Exeter, on a deprived, tough estate where the issues just simply of availability, ability and stability are not ones that you can take for granted. There are some real challenges here. And yet, for all the reasons that we identified at the start of this morning in terms of why, we all know that actually the development and nurturing of indigenous native leadership, as it were, is going to be absolutely critical for the health and life and growth of the church. Leadership isn't the most important thing. Of course it's not. God is the most important thing. But it is one aspect of the life of the church which helps nurture and develop, for all the reasons we identified, nurture and develop the making of disciples. So it is challenging. There are some really tough, tough things that can make it very, very difficult in certain contexts. There are others who may be working in a more professional community, and you have different challenges, but you do have challenges in those communities as well. There are often folks, it's interesting in our patronage churches, the ones we find most difficult to appoint to are those that are larger churches in professional communities. Why? Because there are plenty of people in the church who think they know better how to run the church than the vicar does. And that can be a real issue. It's not easy to handle that sort of dynamic that goes on. Given all of that, what we're going to do in this next little period is talk about how and share best practice, really, about how do we actually go about the developing of leaders. And I've got a little sort of framework, which I'm sort of trialing here. This is its first public airing in a group of this sort of kind. So it'd be interesting to see how it goes and what you make of it. But it's a little thing where I want to talk about 3D leadership development and three words, funnily enough, all beginning with D, that I think are just core, germane to how we go about the development of leaders. The first one we've already covered, that's about discerning who. And I suggest to you that probably the most difficult part of the development of leaders is the discerning bit. I think that's the toughest one of the three that we're going to talk about. And that's why we took a bit of time exploring it and trying to think through some of the issues. It isn't easy. Over the years that I've been involved in the sort of working with and developing of leaders, I've made... and I'm even aware that this language isn't very, you know, always easy or sensible language to use. But I've made all sorts of mistakes, and I've had all sorts of struggles, and I've appointed people to leadership roles, and then it's all gone terribly pear-shaped, and it's been very, very, very costly. What I do know is this, that it is worth investing the time before rather than investing even more time after mopping up the problem. And I have a tendency to shrink the time before because I'm impetuous and want to get on with things. And I have to keep telling myself, James, take time over this. That's what I have learned, to take time over the discerning bit of it. In the team that I'm currently responsible for, we needed to appoint somebody to a leadership role, and we went through two rounds of discernment selection interview process and didn't appoint on either occasion. And now I am so glad we didn't, because the person who's in post is brilliant. But it took us nearly 2 years to find them. And it was costly during those 2 years because we had a vacancy, which meant others on the team had to pick up some stuff that was that person was going to be doing. And it was costly, but I am so glad. We met this Monday and I looked around the table and said, it's just brilliant working with you folks. Because it is. It really, really is. And I'm so glad we took the time. On other occasions, I haven't taken the time and it has been very costly. Take time. And if at all possible, place prayer at the heart of the discernment process and don't discern on your own, discern with others. Because you're more likely to make a good choice on the basis of others being involved in it. So in some senses, we've touched on that one. Here's the second one, develop. And this is where we're going to spend a bit of time now. So we've discerned some people that we might want to see nurture and grow in terms of leadership in the local church. All sorts of different people, different ages, different backgrounds, different experiences. But nonetheless, people whom we think God is in some way at work in their lives might be leading them towards something new and different. People who we spot some sense of Christ-like character growing within them. People where we see some leadership abilities which match with the sort of things we're thinking they might be involved in. People who actually, as we work with them, we have a sense of their openness and their humility and ability to grow and learn and take feedback, faithful to the small things and all of that stuff. How do we develop them? So my question for us to discuss in twos and threes is this. As you reflect back on your own life, what has helped you grow as a leader? And we're going to compile on the flip chart a list of things that have helped us to grow, and then we'll reflect on those things and work together on how can we shape others and grow others. And I've got a few thoughts I'll add to the list, no doubt, at some point. Okay, so twos and threes, a few minutes just to have the conversation. What's helped us as we reflect back to grow in the leadership roles that we find ourselves in today? Okay, let's pull together our experience. What's helped us grow as leaders as we reflect back over the years? Somebody start us off and call them out nice and loud, remembering I'm half deaf. I didn't hear that. I'm really sorry. Encouragement. Thank you. Yeah, absolutely. Encouragement. And if I can just add to that, affirmation. You'll be aware that the difference is affirmation is the giving thanks to somebody for something they have already done. Encouragement is the giving strength to somebody for something they're yet to do. And those two things, I talk about them as the seeds, the soil in which the seeds of leadership grow. They are just so important, affirmation and encouragement. And if we've cultivated soil in which there's lots of affirmation and encouragement, then we're more likely to be able to develop leaders. Great. Encouragement and affirmation. Yes.
Opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep, okay. So opportunities, good role models, bad role models. Yeah. Yes. Yes, thank you. Small tasks first. Yep. So there's something there, isn't there, about appropriate next steps and not. Yeah, we'll come back to that a bit later on. Yes, next to you. Yes, just so I check, education training. Yeah. Thank you. Some education, training to help build confidence. Okay, good. Let's go over this side. Jill, Jane. Okay, so something about safe space. Good relationships. Yep, okay. Yes. Okay, good. Yep, so prayer support. And Exodus 17. Arm holder uppers. Craig, yes. Yes. Constructive. Criticism. We're going to come back to that in a minute, but yeah, constructive criticism. Let's go over here again. Yeah. 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 Okay. Thank you. Relationships. Something about living life together. Yep. Okay. Yep. Yes. Okay, so there's something about vulnerability and humility. And that's in the sort of role model, isn't it, that you're looking for that? Okay, and we're going to come back to a number of these in a moment. Let's just get them up and then we'll... Yes?
It's a slightly different word from constructive criticism. I know professional life we would talk to positively critique.
Positively critique. Okay. Okay. Positively critique. Thank you. Okay, good. Yes?
Slightly different from the
role of a mentor. Yep. Yep. So there's something about a mentor who's outside of the context. And there's all sorts of other helping roles. Yes, at the back. Yep. Okay, so we've got opportunities. I'm going to put next to that genuine responsibilities. Yeah. Okay. Okay, great. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And if I may, I'm going to add in there permission and space to fail. Because you can be given permission, but not necessarily the space. So it's a combination of the two. Yes.
I think children and young people's summer camps.
Yeah.
Are a great place for us to read down that list. I mean, lots of those characters.
I will give you your tenor in a moment. And I'm just going to add CPAS children's summer camps. They do exist. Brilliant. Summer camps for kids. Excellent. Okay, great. Other opportunity, other ways in which we've been helped to grow as leaders as we reflect back.
Fear.
Who said that? Just so I can say a bit more. Okay, thank you. Fear. Oh, he thought he said beer, right? Any others? Yes, right at the back. Bible, thank you. Okay, any others? Yes. Okay, okay. So somebody who's encouraged you to persevere, to endure, to keep going with something, even though it's hard. Yeah. Yeah, okay. Well, if I put endure as a summary of that, if that's all right, let's do that. Great. And there was one more was waving. Yes. Yes. Okay. So let me link that to this. Okay. Good. Now, oh, okay, I've got space for one more. Okay, let's put that down here then. Listening to sermons from outside your environment. Okay, good. All right, I'm sure we could continue, but here's a great list. So, we could end at this point. Go and do. Oh, if only it was quite that easy. But it is a great list, isn't it? Things that have helped us. So encouragement and affirmation, the soil in which leadership is going to grow. It is so important. So important. Because as people grow, as they develop, as they try things, without encouragement and affirmation, it's hard to endure when it gets tough. It's hard to keep going. These are the things that really, really make a difference. Opportunities and with responsibility, absolutely. My training incumbent was excellent at this because I describe it as how he always gave me enough rope to trip myself up, but never enough rope to hang myself. There was always opportunities. There was genuine responsibility, but at the same time, there was actually some wise decisions about what those opportunities were. We sometimes talk about this in terms of three zones, red, green, and ultraviolet. So if I just sort of paste this out, here's the green zone in which somebody currently is placed. This is where they're comfortable. They're nothing stretching in this zone. They're quite content where they are. One of the things that a good opportunity will do, it'll actually shift them one pace out of the green zone into the red zone. The red zone is a place of stretch. It's the place where actually, oh, I'm not so comfortable. I've not quite done this before. I'm having to pray a bit more, think a bit more, engage a bit more about how I'm going to do this. It's the place of stretch. And that's the place of growth, generally. Then beyond the red zone is the ultraviolet zone. This is not the place to take people. This is the zone where actually people get damaged quite often. Because it's so far removed from their green zone, and this is the place where things can go dramatically wrong. And occasionally one comes across somebody who, in their sort of leadership development, somebody's put them in an ultraviolet place, and it's been so damaging that 20 years later, they're still trying to recover from the experience. Now, we need to be careful here, don't we? Because sometimes God takes us into the ultraviolet zone. But I think in terms of our leadership development, what we're trying to do is to recognise where people's green is and encourage them into the red. And to be wise about not putting them into the ultraviolet. The lovely thing is that actually, of course, as somebody has been in green, they step into red. If they inhabit the red for a time, and it will differ according to different people how long, actually the green expands. And what was red becomes green. And then you're looking for the next, because now the bit of the ultraviolet has now become red. And there's other bits of the red which are much closer to their green. So you're now encouraging them into the next red. And again, it expands over time. So always looking for the appropriate next step opportunities. What's the red that we might encourage somebody to step into? And accompany them on that journey of stepping into the red. It's just one way of sort of picturing the opportunities with responsibilities. good role models, bad role models. Let's have a conversation about that. What do good role models look like? What do bad role models look like? No names, please. What do good role models look like? What do bad role models look like? As we reflect on those who have been those two things for us, and of course reflect on ourselves, are we those to others? What does it look like, sound like, feel like? Thank you.
They're usually the people who don't know that they're being good role models. They're usually the ones that you look at because they're leading an awkward life.
Yeah.
But actually, you know, they're
usually. Yeah. Yeah. Comment made here about that they're often the people who don't know they're being good role models because what they're doing is just getting on with leading a good life, an ordinary life is the word you use, leading an ordinary life, but doing it in a way which actually is a very godly way of doing it. Okay, great. Other thoughts on this? Yes?
You need to get your hands dirty.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's something about humility, I think, linked to that. Okay, good.
I think a good role model may be different in different circumstances. So, yeah. If you're a particularly good role model, if they're modelling perhaps the next step that you want somebody to go into, because actually, if they are operating in the ultraviolet for that individual,
yes.
Actually, they're not being a role model,
yes.
It's too difficult.
Yes.
So, for each person, they'll probably have a different good role model, might be good for them and bad for them.
Yeah. Great comment. Yeah, and that's one of the reasons why it's helpful to have a diversity of leadership, because where you are may be a good role model for this person, but not for that person. But where this person in leadership is, we could be a good role model for that person, but not necessarily for this person. And it's one of the practical reasons why diversity is so important in leadership, that we're not the solo leader on our own, if at all possible. Some circumstances, it's not possible to be anything other than that. But if at all possible, not to be so, for the sake of many, invest in a few, who then will become role models for others in a way that we might not be able to be for them. Thank you. Really helpful. Yeah. So there's something about inspiration, something about, it's difficult to describe exactly, isn't it? But there is something about, gosh, I somehow would love to have be a bit like who they are. There is an inspirational element to it. Yeah, okay.
Is there something about our probably general Britishness that we wouldn't want to put ourselves up as an example? So I've read Philippians 4, which I've read lots of.
Yeah.
Yes. Or received,
yes.
Or heard from me, or
seen
me, put in practice.
Yeah.
I couldn't even dream of saying that to somebody.
Yes.
Basically saying that.
Yeah.
But actually, that's intentional. And mutual friend Chris Green would say something about churches that have grown hugely, perhaps in the 60s and 70s. How did you do it? Muddle along. And show me what you did. Help me to understand. Because if I don't know what you did and what you didn't do,
yeah.
And sort of floating it to the top, but in.
Yeah. And Paul himself saying, imitate me as I imitate Christ. I mean, goodness me. And there's an element of that in that Philippians 4 passage as well. And there is something. So I think there is something in the DNA of British culture which is delightfully attractive and very gospel sort of. Aligned in the sort of humility, the valuing of humility. The challenge is that there are times where actually that's good. One of the flip sides of it is something called the tall poppy syndrome. You may have come across this in Warwickshire, where I live, in the mining communities of North Warwickshire. They've got this lovely phrase, tall poppy syndrome. And the basic thing is, if anybody in the community thinks that they might have something to offer, cut them down. Because we don't like that. We keep people the same level as the rest of us. And that, then, if you are ministering in that sort of community, it's a very different, difficult context in which to address some of the stuff you're alluding to, about how do you actually have people who are further on and models and in that sense raised up a little bit in a positive way. because actually we're going to cut them down if they're like that. It's quite a challenge. There are other parts of the country where that syndrome is very woven into the sort of culture of the... Yes.
This is what I prepared.
Yeah.
This is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
Rather than I'm about to do the best assembly that's ever been done in school. Stand it up.
Yeah.
Exactly. This is what I'm trying to do.
Yeah.
Do you think I did?
Yeah.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah.
I think that kind of thing is manageable. How you spread that out over a wider area.
And it may be that it is just for the sake of many, you will invest in a few. And you teach them to invest in a few. And it may be that one can't immediately spread it out, but you can spread it out in a smaller group and ripple it rather than necessarily do it on a global level straight away. Yeah. Had your hand up.
Well, I was just wondering, the question is quite genuine in some ways. It's quite difficult to answer because the issue of role depends on the set of circumstances that you're working in. So if a more general answer would be where biblical principles of service are applied to different settings, then have whether if somebody is looking for a good role model as a minister, then they need to see good ministry. Mm-hmm. If they're looking for a good role model for administration or a teacher in service, then they need to see that. What makes it good is simply the biblical principles applied, which might look quite different.
Yeah, indifferent. Yeah, yeah.
So in general, the good role model must, which I guess would be the biblical principles are applied in the settings.
Great. Great. Okay, so biblical principles applied according to the context in which that person is operating. Thank you. A couple of others, and then we're going to move on.
That's describing a high level of self-awareness.
Yeah.
So I think actually, intending to be good, there needs to be a level of self-awareness of where you are.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Let me just pause a moment on that word self-awareness. I mentioned earlier on that I think wisdom is one of the keys to healthy leadership. Here's another key to healthy leadership, self-awareness. And what that looks like in terms of the development of those of us who are in the room as leaders, but also in terms of those we are developing. Leaders who don't have any sort of self-awareness are actually quite difficult people to be around. And they often will replicate their issues in the lives of others because they're not aware enough of themselves to know the damage or the ways in which they're projecting stuff onto other people. Self-awareness is such an important thing. What self-awareness doesn't mean is self-absorption. And there is a little bit of a tendency in a culture that we find ourselves in today, which is thoroughly consumerist in its philosophy and understanding, to actually get to that point of self-absorption. It's all about me. No, it's a healthy self-awareness, an awareness of who we are, how we're wired, what are our issues that we're struggling with, and how does that impact other people? Really important. Yeah. 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 Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. And one of the issues around that is to do with, for us sort of thinking theologically for a moment, is around identity. Where is our identity as leaders? And actually, how are we nurturing those that we're seeking to develop as leaders in terms of their identity? And for us as Christian leaders, of course, our identity is in Christ, en Christo. That's the identity we're seeking to nurture. And if somebody's identity is too closely associated with their role, again, that's where all sorts of stuff begins to kick off. Now, you cannot completely disassociate yourself from your role. We are all inhabiting particular leadership roles. I imagine most of us here are inhabiting particular leadership roles. And by the very nature of inhabiting them, there are aspects of that which will impact who we are and how we operate. But if you have too close a connection between your identity and your role, all sorts of problems occur. So part of our leadership development, part of our role modelling actually is to try and ensure that we model that we are disciples before we are leaders. We are disciples before we are vicars. We are disciples before we're readers, but disciples before we're, or whatever your particular role might be. That is where our root is. It is in Christ, in who we are in him. Yes?
I'm not sure we touched on the value of bad role models.
No, okay, go for it.
Both professionally and within church life, I've learned a great deal from bad role.
Yes. Absolutely. And the sobering thing is, I think, to reflect on the fact as to how or to what extent we might be being bad role models to others. Because I've certainly learned from bad role models, but I would be very arrogant to think that I'm not sometimes bad role models to other people myself. Yeah. But one can learn huge amounts from that. Absolutely. Jane. Yeah. Good question. Any answer to that question? Richard? Yeah. One of the marks of a genuinely secure leader is not just that they grow somebody to do what they do, it's that they grow somebody to go beyond where they have gone. That's a mark of a really secure leader. And it's a great thing when you see it, because actually they're secure enough in who they are, and their identity is in Christ, and they know God's love and grace in their lives. They know that they don't have everything to offer the world, but they're very comfortable in offering what they have to offer, and they nurture others. And sometimes the others will go beyond where they are, and they're delighted when that happens. So one of the interesting pieces of work done by a chap called Jim Collins in a book called Good to Great, which if you haven't read and you are interested in exploring some of this leadership stuff, is worth reading. It's a book which looks at some research at the companies that have gone from good to great. So it's secular research on companies that have gone to good to great. Jim Collins, who was the overseer of the research, was determined that one of the results that they would not find is that it had anything to do with leadership. And his researchers came back and said, well, we've got a number of things that we've identified in these situations. One of the things is about leadership. He said, no, it's not. Go back and do the research again. So they went back and did the research again, and they came back and said, no, one of the factors that does make a difference is leadership. But what we've discovered is this. Companies that went from good to great and then back down to good or worse were led by level four leaders. Companies that went from good to great and sustained greatness, and they have particular methodology for defining that, actually were led by level five leaders. The distinguishing marks that they had about level four and level five leaders, they called level four leaders charismatic leaders. They called level five leaders inspirational leaders. The distinguishing marks that I can off the top of my head remember are two. Level four leader, when everything goes well, looks in the mirror and says, what a good job I've done. And when everything goes wrong, looks out of the window to find people to blame. Level five leader, when everything goes well, looks out of the window to find people to praise and say, oh, they're just a great team. This person's worked so hard on this. And when everything goes wrong, looks in the mirror and takes responsibility. And it was just very interesting. That was one of the distinguishing characteristics. The other qualities that they identified in a level five leader were that they were two things that combined in the level five leader. Intense personal resolve and intense humility. Two qualities, resolve and humility, which is why the level four leader, when it all goes wrong, when it all goes wrong, takes responsibility themselves, and when it goes well, says it's other people, they're the ones that who've done it. But there's two qualities, it's humility and resolve. And the resolve is around, it's not about me, it's actually about, well, in their situation, the company, the organization. fascinating qualities. If you're not into research in that way, let me recommend another book, which is interestingly written completely unaware of this book by Jim Collins, called Good to Great. The other book is by Andrew Roberts, and it's called Hitler and Churchill, The Secrets of Leadership. Andrew Roberts is a well-known historian and has written a very interesting biography of Hitler and Churchill. And as you read through this biography, if you happen to know about Jim Collins' research, you discover that you find that he discovers exactly the same thing in Hitler and Churchill. So this is how Roberts summarizes the Hitler and Churchill thing. He says, apparently when you had an audience with Hitler, you came out of the room believing that he could do anything. Whereas when you had an audience with Churchill, you came out of the room believing you could do anything. And for Hitler, and he then gives a brilliant example of how this actually lost Hitler the war, a particular instance which Hitler, because of his self-absorption, because it was all about him, didn't allow his generals to make a decision that needed to be made, and that actually, if they had made, would have probably wiped out the entire British army that managed to get off the coast at Dunkirk. He delayed that decision by 3 days, and those 3 days got the army out. And if he had taken what his generals had said, and because they'd made the decision and he hadn't, he didn't want to go with it. If he had actually taken what they'd said, probably the rest of the army would have been wiped out before they escaped from Dunkirk. So it's a very interesting, two different ways, two different people in two completely different fields, actually ending up in a very interesting distinction between charismatic and inspiring leaders. That's their terminology that they use. How did we get into that, except that you teed me up for it? Oh, yes, windows and mirrors. Yeah, windows and mirrors, that's right. Okay, let's go back up here. Sorry, yes.
Going the extra mile.
Yes.
When I was 20, one of the leaders of the church took time out,
yes,
to go to teach
him today. Right, right. Amazing. So I'm just going to repeat it for the recording. Going the extra mile, when you were in your 20s, one of the leaders of the church actually took time out to help you learn to drive, went the extra mile. And in that sense, did what's one of these things that's up here, you know, it's a bit about this living life together, sharing life together, and aspects of that as well. Okay, let's just whistle through the rest of the list. Education and training, an important part of the process of growing leaders. Again, let me just deliberately be a little bit controversial. Some interesting research, again, secular research, but some interesting research which looks at four areas that help develop leaders. And please note, all four areas are positive in helping develop leaders. 50% of leadership development is actually, through this research, comes about through giving people appropriate responsibilities. 30% comes about through relationships. 10% comes about through what they describe as shaping experiences. That's shaping leadership experiences. There are obviously shaping life experiences, but it was specifically leadership experiences. And 10% of leadership development comes about through education, through training. Now, we can, of course, argue with the research and all the findings, but it is quite interesting that when Jesus appoints 12, he appoints 12 to do what? To be with him. And then the next verse in Mark chapter 3 says to be sent out for him. That the two primary things Jesus seems to be inviting the 12 to do is to do life with him. In other words, as I engage in what I am doing, join with me in this, travel the road with me. And so they see him engaging with the Pharisees. They see him loving the last, the least and the lost. They see him coping with his own struggles and aspects of hungry and tired and weeping. They do life with him. Come and be with me is his invitation. And then he sends them out on his behalf to proclaim the good news, to heal the sick, to cast out the demons. And we see that as it rolls out through the rest of Mark's gospel in the ways that he does it. Those two things, relationship and responsibility, are where Jesus focuses time. Now that is not to say that formal education and training doesn't have a place. Of course it does. It's a very important part of it. But if we think that formal education and training alone will develop leaders, then I think we all know that it's more than just that on its own. We do quite a lot of work in theological colleges and theological courses. I was teaching on one just recently. And we also run this thing called the Arrow Leadership Program, which is an 18-month leadership development process. A lot of people who've been through theological college and courses say to me, why didn't we get all this stuff that we do on Arrow when we were on our theological college or course? Expecting me to say, yeah, it would be really good, wouldn't it? But my answer is no. I think what we need in our theological colleges and courses is great engagement with learning the Bible and learning some theology. That's what that's set up to do. And the system of the Church of England, of course, is then that you get into a curacy where you learn on the job, how to do the job. And the stuff we're offering people happens a bit later on when you've got some experience to reflect on that actually will helpfully shape your engagement with this aspect of leadership development. Because the best time to develop, put formal leadership development into people is actually when they're in a leadership role. It's when they're doing it, not just when they're thinking about doing it. And that's why I always say to people, no, Arrow is designed to pick you up when you've already gone through the education bit, which is really important, some experience, which is really important, and then we'll engage with you and work with you at that stage. Safe space, absolutely. Prayer support, great. Exodus 17. Very interesting. A clergy person said to me the other day, why is it that we encourage our mission partners to have a network of intercessors, but we don't do that for ourselves? It's a really good comment. Now, some of you, I'm sure, do. But to develop a network of personal intercessors, it's one of the things we get everyone on Arrow to do, to identify some people who are going to be your personal, who have a heart for you, a concern for you, and will pray for you. Because actually, we're on the front line as leaders within the life of the church. And we need those who do the Exodus 17 thing for us. Yes?
As an intermissionary,
as well as a cleric. Right. Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's a very shrewd comment. And I'd want to encourage us to do it nonetheless. Yeah. And how we do it and who we do it with, and we need to be sensible and wise and all the rest of it. But yeah, absolutely. Good comment. So something around prayer support, constructive criticism, or what was that? Positively critique. One of the things that we learn from those who come through Arrow is that the vast majority of say that they get nothing like enough positive critique. In other words, they don't get enough feedback to actually help them to know the things that they need to address in their character, in their competence, in terms of their discernment of God's call on their life. They're not getting enough. Now, of course, there are some contexts where you get far too much of this. But this is such an important thing. And one of the little tips that we've sort of worked on is just to be aware that when we give feedback to people, beware of not giving it to them in the way that you most like to receive it. Just as the same with different people receive affirmation in different ways, different people also receive critique, feedback in different ways. So one of the questions I ask those that I'm sort of seeking to develop in leadership is a very simple question. I simply say to them this: tell me, what is the most helpful way for me to give you positive critique, feedback? And they'll often look blank at me and say, what do you mean? So I'll then offer them a few different ways that it might be given to them. And normally they'll go, oh, actually, I see what you mean. That's my preferred option. And then I go, okay, that's fine. Now I know that, I will try and give you positive critique in that way that will help you to receive it. Yes, okay. So, for example, if we're nurturing somebody in their leadership role to teach the Bible, preach and teach, some people actually, some people prefer to have the feedback very close to the event. And if you don't do it very close to the event, they've moved on very quickly and won't be very open because they're already down the track. Other people, if you give it to them straight close to the event, they really struggle to receive it. They need a few days. Some will possibly even need to have delivered something else before you give them feedback on the thing that you want to give them feedback on. So it may be several weeks before you give it. But if you offer them that option and help them to work out what's the way which is going to help you best to receive it, and then go with their preferred style, it just makes it easier for them. Because we all have different ways that help. Some people, I'll just give you another example, same thing. Some people, you know the thing of three positives for one sort of critical putting it crudely. Some people just sit there and you do the three positives and they don't hear them because they know the one critical is coming. So you've just wasted all your encouragement and affirmation because they've heard it on one level, but it's not sunk in because they know what's coming. Other people, if you don't do the positive first, they will never be able to receive the negative. So again, just offering them as an option. So tell me, is it going to be most helpful for me to go for the things where I'm going to offer some sort of positive critique, or actually is it most helpful for me to offer some positive things? And for some people, is it going to be most helpful for me to separate and do it on two occasions? Now, that's an awful lot more work for us. But actually, giving people feedback in a way which makes it easiest for them to receive is a way of, I would suggest, serving and loving them well. So just asking the question, how do you best receive feedback? What's going to be most helpful for you? I'll give you one other example. Some people prefer it written than spoken. Other people would loathe it being written and would much prefer it spoken. Do you get the idea? Just work with what's going to be the most helpful way for them to receive the feedback. It's also true that actually people receive affirmation and encouragement in different ways. And again, working out what is the best way. So a colleague of mine, who I've worked with for a number of years, if you give affirmation to him publicly in any way, and that publicly means one other person present, so it's not just about in front of the whole church. If you give affirmation to him publicly in any way, he absolutely dies. He really struggles to receive it. So I had to learn not to give him public affirmation, but to find a way of giving him affirmation in the way that he best receives it. And it's always one-to-one, and it's face-to-face, and it's in a particular way that I've learned that's how he best receives affirmation. That's how I can build him up and encourage him. Other people, actually, it is helpful for it to be done in a public space and in a public way. So it's just working, isn't it, with different people, different preferences, finding a way to nurture in a way which is going to be most helpful for those we're working with. Yes, yes, there is. Yeah, yep, definitely. I couldn't agree more. Yeah, definitely. So we may start there. But we will need to push them. And life isn't always going to treat them as they might like it to be treating them. And we do, in that sense, need to... I couldn't agree more. Okay, let's just touch on one or two other things. I want to just say something about relationships living life together. You mentioned camps. I think one of the things that camps does is it puts people into a relationship dynamic, which is just so positive and so helpful. Graham Tomlin, who you may have read some of his stuff, his book on spiritual fitness, I've forgotten the exact title of the book, but one of the things he argues for is that actually if we want to nurture and develop disciples and leaders, it's going to be in community that it'll happen best. It'll be in shared life that it'll be happen best. And he also suggests that camps and places like that are often very significant points in people's development and nurture. And I suppose for those of us who are in local church leadership, how do we nurture that sort of environment where that's the shared life stuff is happening? I was talking to Phil over breakfast this morning. Phil, do you just want to mention what you've done in terms of shifting from home groups to small groups and the life stuff that's happening there? Rory, you're in charge of it. Why don't you mention something about what's been happening there and just that sense of shared life?
Thank you. So we have moved away from a classical Bible study meeting fortnightly to a small group meeting weekly. And the main difference has been to make it based on a sermon. We've tried to lower the bar at which we want people to feel they can access the small group. And to really think we're going to have the people who preach do lots of the hard work in the text. And then we want to drive home the application that hopefully the preachers have teed up. And some notes that have been provided by the preacher, how can we help people to take the next step forward in serving Christ in their context within that small group? And then we want to deliberately make sure we have time to pray about that. And if you like, the first question for this week's small group is always, last week we prayed for X, how did you get on? How have you seen God answer that prayer? because we want to build the relationality of that.
Yep.
And quite intentionally.
Yeah.
So that's sort of been the shift. Larry Osborne has written a book called Sticky Church, where one of the things he argues is it's small relational groups like that that help people who come through your door to feel as though they belong. And that was sort of the genesis for us in thinking through making a difference.
Great. Thank you. So something about, and I suppose one of the things that I want to suggest is that if we're looking to develop leaders in particular, as much as it is possible, and it's not always possible, develop them in community, not on their own. Because there is something about the dynamic of developing people in community. Some of you may have heard a guy called Mike Breen speak around this subject, and he rather naughtily jokes about the fact, well, if Jesus sent two to get a donkey, we should do a lot more about actually appointing people in pairs. And he seriously argues, don't ever appoint a youth leader on their own. Always appoint them in pairs. And offers a model for doing that. Because his basic argument is, leadership is best exercised in community, and leadership is best grown in community. And I think there's a very strong biblical warrant for that, actually. I'm going to mention a bit more about that in a moment. Let me just finish off the list. Vulnerability and humility. Let me, if I may, just offer one insight on vulnerability. If you want to grow Gen Y are those roughly born between the ages of 1984 and 2000. So they are those who are older teenagers and young adults today. If you want to grow Gen Y as leaders, and you're not Gen Y yourself, let me just offer you a little insight from a 3-year research project we've just finished. Vulnerability is key to growing Gen Y leaders in you as a leader. The reason why is because Gen Y, for all sorts of reasons I haven't got time to go into, authenticity is one of their touchstones. And authenticity is partly modelled by vulnerability. And if, like me, you were brought up in a very different culture, I'm baby boomer, then there was Gen X and then there's Gen Y, where actually vulnerability was something that was knocked out of you as a young person. Don't reveal anything. Keep everything inside yourself. Actually, I find it quite hard to be vulnerable. I've learnt over the years in Christian circles to be quite good at being honest, but vulnerability and honesty are two different things. Honesty is often about me talking about things I struggled with in the past but are now sorted. In other words, I do this. I keep you at an arm's length. Vulnerability is about going, actually, there's stuff now that I am struggling with, and I am going to let you into my life and allow you to be part of God's help to help me work through whatever it is that I'm working through now. Honesty, vulnerability. Gen Y are looking for vulnerability in those who are going to invest in them. And we definitely need to be about the growing of younger leaders. Two reasons. Firstly, all the research shows that in terms of leadership development, that which happens in your early years will form within you the talents that you carry with you for pretty much the rest of your life. By the time you are a young adult, most of your talent formation has occurred. And the opportunities and experiences that young people will get will go to the forming of those talents that they will carry with them for the rest of their lives. Do we want great leadership in 30, 40, and 50-year-olds? You must invest in children and young people and give them opportunities. I came to faith, as I mentioned, as a young teenager. The first leadership opportunity I got was when my vicar, in a very middle-of-the-road, going nowhere Anglican church, because I didn't know anything else existed, because I didn't come to faith in a church context per se. My vicar came to me age 16 and said, James, you're a young person. Yes. He said, we don't have any other young people in the church. No, I was blatantly aware of that. When my mum and I arrived at the church one Sunday morning, we lowered the average age by 40 years instantly. There were no other young people. He said, it would be great to have some more young people. I said, yes. He said, why don't you do something about it? Now, I have to tell you, I don't think it was a strategic plan on his part. It was desperation. It was desperation. But in the 2 years that followed, I probably learned as much about leadership as I have ever learned in any other 2-year period of my life. Because he set up an opportunity and said, do something about it. Actually, I'm going to give you three reasons why it's important. Here's the second reason. Research we'd done a few years ago on tweenagers, that's that sort of 8 to 12 age group, we identified one of the top reasons why tweenagers leave church is because they are treated as passengers and consumers rather than participants and contributors. So if we want to keep this generation of young people that we might already have, I know not every church here will have children and young people, but if we do, if we want to keep this generation we already have, then actually part of the key is to move them from being a passenger to being a participant, from being a consumer to being a contributor. Give them opportunities. And here's the third reason why I'm pretty passionate about developing younger leaders. I don't know if you know the statistics for the Church of England, but we only have, in the latest bunch of statistics, 88 people under the age of 30 who are ordained in stipendiary parochial ministry. 88 under the age of 30. When I was training for ordination, it was unusual for anybody in the college I was in to be over the age of 30. Now the average age of ordination is 49. Now, ordination isn't the bee's knees, it's not everything, but clearly those who are in ordained ministry have a role within the life of the church, and one of the things we have is an increasingly aging age group of ordained people. And although the latest statistics do show that the last bunch that have entered into training, the age has dropped just a little bit, we don't yet know whether that's a trend or a blip, and even if it is a trend, we still have a massive issue about actually encouraging young people to take seriously that God might just be wanting them to give the rest of their lives to leadership within the local church, so that the local church might be about God's mission and ministry in the world. And if we want to grow this generation, those of us who are of a different generation may have to do a bit of work on vulnerability. Now, I know that immediately sends all sorts of warning signs out in terms of, you know, you can be inappropriately vulnerable. Of course you can. You need to be wise about vulnerability. Yes, you do. But if we are not vulnerable at all, this generation will really struggle to connect with us. The other really exciting thing about Generation Y is that they are investment hungry. They are looking for older people to invest in their lives. Their struggle is they can't find people who are prepared to do it. So the, investing in them. They want people to invest in their lives. There are all sorts of reasons for that. Folks, if you want to find out a bit more about this, the bit of research we did is written up in this little booklet, Engaging Gen Y, Leading Well Across the Generations. It's available on the bookstall. And it just might give you a few ideas about some of the issues about if you really want to see Gen Y, the sort of 84 to 2000 cohort grow in leadership. This might just give you a few ideas that would be helpful. And this other book that my colleague Ruth wrote some years ago is, again, excellent, Growing Young Leaders. Very helpful insights into how do we actually grow a younger generation of people so that they, as teenagers and young adults, are actually contributing in the life of the church and, of course, as the church in the world, where they'll also often be in leadership places of responsibility. So that's just a little something about vulnerability. And mentors, this is Gen Y, are a generation who are very open to having mentors. Their struggle is finding people who will mentor them. And I'm looking at the cohort primarily because there's not many of us in the room who are Gen Y. We are the ones who could significantly invest in that generation. And I want to encourage us to do that because they're open to it if we would connect with them in an appropriate way. Permission space to fail, summer camps, yes, absolutely, the place of fear, the Bible, listening to sermons outside of the context. This is a great list. This is a great list. And so part of what we may want to reflect on as we go from today is, what one or two things might I take from that list that currently I'm not doing that would just take me a step on in the nurturing and developing of others as leaders? So we've talked a little bit about developing And I just mentioned a moment ago about Mark. Jesus invites them to be with him and to be sent out to, and a number of things that are mentioned there. That's certainly going to be a part of the process. We have a particular model that we've worked up over the years, which is at the heart of our Growing Leaders material, which is a leadership development resource for local churches to use to develop leaders. The material's on the bookstore if you want to have a look at it. And that model tries to pull together five different things in the development of leaders. Let me just offer you the model, and then we're going to be going to lunch in a few minutes' time. The model goes like this. As we think about developing others, it's good to have some sort of framework to use. Clearly, God needs to be at the center of it. But actually, what we're looking to do is to make sure that we are growing people in their relationship with God. They are disciples before they are leaders. And the key there is to do everything we can to enable people to be mastered by the amazing grace of God. The foundations then, out of that identity being located in Christ, folks, there's a world of difference, isn't there, between a leader who leads from God's love and grace and a leader who leads for God's love and grace. World of difference between those two things. And that's all to do with identity. Out of that will come a whole range of convictions, biblical truth that will shape how we understand what we're about and what we're doing. And the foundations then are going to be around issues to do with call, helping them to work out how they live this one life God is giving to them as disciples of Jesus Christ in the particular ways that God wants them to live the life, which will make them distinct from the person next to them. The second foundation for developing leaders is around character. We've already identified that that's very big in the understanding of the scriptures about what you're looking for, growing in Christ-like character. Then there is some stuff we want to do in helping them develop in competence. This is about leadership ability. Leadership ability is made up of six things. Knowledge, a skill, spiritual gift, talent, and it's influenced by passion and personality. So there are six things which actually make up leadership ability. And what we're looking to do is to try and grow people in the appropriate abilities for the role of leadership that they are in. But it's made up of a combination of six things. Then theologically, biblically, we recognize that the New Testament reminds us that leadership is both grown best in community and developed best in community. It's interesting in the New Testament, there are only two references in the New Testament to leader or leadership that are singular. Only two. All the rest are communal. Paul talks incessantly about synergoi, his co-workers that he's working with. And because that theologically reflects something, leadership in the New Testament reflects something about the nature of who, the nature of the church's body, which reflects something about the nature of who God is Trinity. So leadership is best developed in community and best exercised in community. And then, of course, leadership has a particular context in which it has to be worked out. And we have a diversity of contexts, and that does need to shape how we actually look to develop our leaders. As I mentioned earlier, apply a middle-class leadership development model to a non-middle-class setting, and it ain't going to work very well. So working out how do we engage with this stuff in a way that is appropriate to the context is helpful. And for those of you who are just wondering, how many more C's can James Lawrence get out of this diagram? There are three more to come. What do you get if you combine call and character in a developing leader? What you develop in them is courage. Courage because they have a sense of where God is leading them and what he's asking them to do, and they have the Christ-like character to go with it. Build courage. Courage is a vital quality in leadership. What do you get if you build competence and character in a leader? You build credibility. Folks, you can have somebody who is incredibly Christ-like in character in a leadership role, but if they have no competence, it's not long till they have no credibility. You can also do the same. You can have somebody of amazing competence in a leadership role, but if there's no Christ-like character, it's not long until their credibility is very, very small. Credibility is actually a combination of character and competence. So as we nurture people in leadership, we're nurturing them in Christ-like character. That's an ongoing lifetime. We're nurturing them in competence. Actually, that's an ongoing lifetime of development as well. Any leader who has stopped learning is a dangerous leader to follow. And then if we nurture competence and call in those who are leaders. What we nurture in them is confidence, an appropriate confidence. A confidence in a God who, to use that phrase that's sometimes used, you know, when God calls, he equips. But also a confidence in a recognition that God has given certain things to each of us, certain abilities and gifts and skills and talents, and actually using those in his service is an appropriate thing to be doing. And then the last two little things to mention about this model is that actually very few of us will develop to our potential in leadership without the input of others. And that might be a coach, it might be a mentor, it might just be a colleague, but some investment from outside, partly because more often than not, others outside will help us to grow in self-awareness if it's done well. And that's one of the keys to healthy growth as a leader. And then what do leaders offer? Well, what leaders offer is clarity. The big questions that leadership is always addressing are the why questions and the what questions and the where questions and the how questions. And part of what leadership offers to the life of a local church is clarity. We're clear about who we are. We are God's people. We're clear about why we exist. We exist to continue the incarnate ministry of Christ on earth, to be about his ministry and mission in the world. We're clear about where we're going. Well, in this church at this time, where we sense that we need to invest some energy and time is in this area. We're clear about how we're going to do that. We're going to do this. When do you need clarity? You need clarity when things are confusing. And leadership comes to a fore when things aren't clear. You don't need much leadership when everything's absolutely obvious. You need leadership when things are complex, confusing. And one of the things that those of us who are in leadership bring is a willingness to ask tough questions, face hard realities, and work hard to gain a sense of clarity. Doesn't necessarily mean we're absolutely certain this is the one and only thing we should do, but as much as we can tell, we believe this is what we need to do. Clarity is the gift that leadership offers to those that they are leading. So that's one model. There are plenty of others, but it's a model that we've been using. And if you are Gen Y, you won't like the fact there are all sorts of C's on there. So we actually have a different way of doing the model, which doesn't use C's because Gen Y think it's far too slick to use all the C's, and we use different words, but you're not mainly Gen Y. Last thing, deploy. Discern who, develop. Develop in the way that a flip chart offers us, and then maybe using a model that looks at a biblical framework for developing, deploy. And we've already mentioned that. Give people the opportunities to grow as leaders by giving them responsibility, genuine responsibility. Make sure, if we can, that it's only red zone and not ultraviolet. And then accompany them on the journey. Do not abandon them. And that's all to do with the affirmation, the encouragement. It's to do with the engaging in such a way that we offer positive and helpful critique. It's being there when they fall down and dusting them off and actually encouraging them to endure when it's tough, to keep going. But deploy. Give people opportunity. Folks, I'll get on my soapbox just once more. Please give young people opportunities. I know many of you will already be doing it. Give young people opportunities. And do that in a way which honours them and respects them and takes them seriously so that they might actually themselves just begin to grow in their sense of confidence that God might be able to use them. We need godly leadership in the church, and we need a generation of younger people who will be nurtured to be the godly leaders now and in the future. So, one framework and a model. Framework of discern, develop and deploy, 3D leadership development, and a model that suggests that it's a combination of different things that helps people to grow well as leaders. We've got a whole bunch of resources that I've brought along. For those of you who haven't come across the Growing Leaders material, it basically takes some of this stuff and tries to work out what would that look like in the life of the local church. There's also another book that I brought along, which is a slightly different approach, but again, lots of wise insight. And if you've not come across this by Malthus and Mancini called Building Leaders, good insights in this particular book as well. At the end of the day, part of our responsibility as those in leadership is to develop other leaders. For the sake of many, invest in the few. Why? Not because leadership is the important thing. It isn't. It genuinely isn't. But because we want God's people to be about God's mission and ministry in the world. I was asked what gets me out of bed in the morning. It's seeing children and young people and women and men of every age come to a saving relationship with Jesus as their Lord and Saviour. And those people then being about God's mission and ministry in the world, changing society, helping others to come to faith as well. And part of what we offer as we develop leaders is creating the environment in which our people can be about God's mission and ministry in the world, just as we are about it as well. I think leadership makes a difference. But it only makes a difference if we keep our eye on the ball, that it's not an end in itself. It's just a means of serving the local church, so that the local church may be about what Jesus wants it to be about. Well, my time is up. Thank you so much for having me. It's been great to be here and fascinating to engage with the conversations, and I look forward to further conversations after the break.